Well, it's great to be here. And let me see, let me just reflect quickly here on my topics. Okay. So the role of story in American Indian communities, why is it important?
Well, of course, it's difficult to put things into context that I guess makes sense. But I like to refer to the ancient history of the region and kind of, you know, go forward from there. And so I'm fascinated with the ancient history of the region, and it's informed by a lot of what we have left here. And I feel like the more I learn about the ancient history of the region, the more I understand the significance of story in people's lives and in communities, and how stories bring people together or tear them apart. And the stories reverberate through an individual and then outward to their family and to the further extension of their human family and the environment. And so the story that I've begun to construct of this region is a quite beautiful, harmonious story. And it is bound and encapsulated and represented by common shared stories of all of the groups of this region. And the fact that all of the shared stories are so closely related in detail, despite the fact that all of the groups here spoke different languages, tells me that there's a great untold story about how and why these people were able to communicate so effectively with one another and share their stories, and how they're able to adopt one another's stories into their own life ways, and how those stories helped keep them tied together despite their linguistic and otherwise separate cultural existences and histories, heritages. So, for example, the star stories that are told throughout the winter here on the Northern Plains, the historic stories that tribes told, are one of those instruments that brings people together and has for many, many generations, hundreds of years. And so the story of Orion, which is known as the Hand Constellation, is part of a labyrinth of stories that all of the groups here have in common. And that story of the stars there is representative, again, of the interactions of the people. The people that lived here for many thousands of years had no horses. They had no way of raiding one another's camps. They had very little human competition. So their greatest threat was the climate and the natural forces of the world. So people were seen as their resources for enrichment and wealth and all those things that we seek from one another, the same reason why we're standing in a circle here. And so for thousands of years, the star stories, along with other stories, helped keep these people tied with one another, and they were so closely connected that they developed a sign language that was without words. Plain sign language is a language that has no words in it because it was shared by 44 different linguistic groups. So it's a completely conceptual language. There's no way to translate it definitively other than conceptually. So they were able to create this language together, cooperatively, over many generations. And the stories that they shared brought them together and kept them trading with one another for many, many generations. When things began to fall apart with disease and resource scarcity and traumatic loss of life and the acquisition of horses and rifles and all of the other colonial impacts, conflict began to become common and violence began to become more of a commonality. And the story of war, the story of warfare, begins to replace all the other stories in a way that is difficult to describe. Looking back on our history in Western civilization, warfare dominates all of our story of who we are as people. Almost every form of story that we think about historically that informs us about one another is violent and insists upon each and every one of us that we're not individuals to be loved and cared for, but in fact we're threats to one another. Because that's what history has shown us. That story tears us apart, pushes us away from one another, dehumanizes us as communities and as individuals. But yet we cling to it, and we get thrills from it, and we've been taught, you know, by generations the glory that lies within it. And once you start to adopt that story, then you've chosen to take a different path from the common humanity that has brought us to the great achievements that we realize today. So I think about the stories, the great narratives that we've inherited, and how they've managed to link us and continue to in ways that we don't really think about or know. And then how those great narratives become internalized and how we filter our own everyday experiences and tell our own stories using that voice. And how do we find a different voice to tell our story that is fresh and original? And so when I go further, I'm going to talk a little bit about songs and how songs are related to stories and how songs and stories are the same thing and how we have a balanced need in our lives as individuals and in communities to do two things: repeat the old stories and make brand new ones at the same time. And that's the same way with songs. We have old songs that we have to play and utilize, but we still have the need to create new music. And those new songs that we make are part of our whole human process. So there's balance there between the old and the new. And finding the balance and helping us guide our path forward is one of our charges as intellectual creatures. So those are a few thoughts on my mind, but I will open it up for anyone who wants to
I actually had a question. You mentioned that the stories become internalized.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering if you could speak a little bit more about that, because that definitely resonates with me. I'm kind of interested what's on your mind with that, with respect to that.
Well, Henry and I had a nice conversation yesterday, and talking about some of the differences between storytelling and stories between cultures. And so one of the things that we spoke about was, or one of the themes that came up was the colonial voice. And the colonial voice is an authoritarian voice of authority. And it is the ultimate truth. And that voice there, you're either with it or you're not. And if you're not, then you begin to internalize yourself as somebody that's rebellious against the system, I guess. I mean, just to dichotomize the whole thing. If you're with it, well, then now you've got allies, and you yourself try to use that voice because the voice makes sense to you and reflects who you believe you are as a as an individual, your identity. So it reinforces what you've learned from your parents and your grandparents, and what you've read, and what the teachers, how they treat you, and you know, the principal, how the principal has the power, and police officers, and all those things. You either fit with them or you don't. And of course, not everybody is one way or the other, but as each intersection of power confronts us throughout the day, we have to tell ourselves a story that fits with our integrity about how we approach those intersections of power. And do those really reflect who we are as people? And do they reflect who we want to be or what we expect? And are those things the same? I mean, do you believe you're free or not? And does that voice inside you ask you to seek freedom? Or what is that voice telling you, I guess? You know, we just had an interesting conversation here about intertribal warfare hostilities. You know, when you go through a period like tribes did in the 19th century, where you have a cataclysmic loss of life and culture, and you're thrust into a violent position where you're losing everything most important to you, it's difficult to get outside that story. That's a very powerful story. And I would suspect that all the folks in Syria right now, and the Kurds and everyone else that's enduring that horrific experience, that's going to be the story of their life, and it's going to be very difficult for them to find another story that's more powerful, that they're more easily able to internalize, that's going to help them heal. And so that's a whole nother topic there, but that story of healing, and do our stories help us, guide us towards that each day and help us feel whole again? Or do they disintegrate us? Do they set us apart and take us away from the natural processes that we should be so close to? Did that make any sense?
It did.
Shit, I don't
Yeah.
know.
No.
It's philosophy, so.
No, it did. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm thinking about what you just said there. You know, on the one hand, you know, in a very literal way, thinking about the violence of intertribal warfare, you know, here in the history of this place, or in Syria, or tragically so many other places in the world today. But I'm thinking, and then that invitation you gave us at the end about what other stories can we tell? And I've heard it said somewhat proverbially, you know, those who know, you know, no stories at all are simply ignorant. Those who know many stories are wise. But to know only one story, that's death. to be trapped in the same story, whether it fits or not, and to only have that one story about the world that we can tell. No one story is ever going to capture all of human life, all of our existence in this world. But where it did, you know, to have no stories at all, okay. You know, you'll learn, you know that you need to learn stories.
Yeah.
But to be trapped in only one story is about the worst possible place to be for us as humans.
I think so, absolutely. And how, you know, I mean, all those are conceptual and hypothetical that you spoke of, and they you know, I mean, certainly they make sense to us. On the other hand, you know, how who's going to grow up without a story?
Right.
I mean, everybody's going to grow up with something.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an overarching narrative there that Henry and I had spoke about, that, like you say, there's the one story,
yeah,
and it's in the history books. And the thing is that it's not a story at all. I mean, it's been stripped of any kind of, you know, soft touch or details. You're given basic information as a learner in our contemporary society. Reflecting back on tribal ways, I mean, there was probably, I'm sure, a combination of both factual information along with the stories to put it into a context. Because believe it or not, the folks that lived here for thousands of years were the ultimate pragmatists. They had to be. You know, they just had to be practical people, because you weren't going to survive out here unless you actually anticipated and strategized and did all the things necessary, right? But at the same time, they've got this imaginative story life that I think is the opposite side of that. And I think that is what allowed each person to gather their own story. And so for in the Crow tribe, we have, they say there's three different types of stories. Some of them don't change. Like the old stories, they say, the real old ones, like the origin stories and stuff like that. Then you've got the newer stories that are more kind of collective memory, still, you know, historical memories that people still, you know, kind of have a collective memory in the community of. Then you have the stories that each and every one of us can share with each other from our own life experiences. So those are the three different types of stories, and depending on, you know, what you're telling, there's a certain respect for, you know, what is perceived to be something that's passed down as a sacred song. Did I use up all my time?
Oh yeah, I think that if anyone else has any questions, please ask. Otherwise, we can certainly kind of move to our next.
Something I always think is important about just the whole concept of story is that it presupposes a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
And it's art. All art is story. And all narrative, all those things, and they're a human kind of, it's what we create, but the creator, what the real, you know, the actual real life doesn't have a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's infinite and constant, and it never ends and it never starts. But we aren't infinite, you know, we're finite. So we make finite stories, and it's something that we, you know, we need to do. It keeps, it's like, you know, there's all kinds of different philosophers talk about how art is the only thing that keeps us sane, and all art is about story in one way or another. It's not just, you know, fiction or, you know, painting and song, and as you said, all of it is in film and whatever it might be.
In some way, I'd almost suggest that almost any endeavor we do has that sort of story element to it. And the idea of just sort of making sense of the world and our place
there
in it.
Right, there you go. Make sense of the world.
I also want to, you mentioned the necessity for indigenous people living on the land to be pragmatic, for it to make sense for the ways of behaving and knowledge to like really reflect reality, because otherwise mm-hmm. there wouldn't be a chance of survival. And then you put the imaginative and story part as like the other side of that. But I wonder if you think there, because it seems to me just from a pragmatic perspective, telling the right kinds of stories that cultivate the right sorts of behavior towards the land, and also not just behavior towards the land, but information about the land, like a story about owl, for instance, might carry really important ecological information about the behavior of owl and what it signifies. And by being packaged within the form of a narrative, it allows that information to be retained and retold, rather than, it's easier for our minds to sort of, so I wonder if you think about what you think about that pragmatic purpose of story to pass down information as well as attitudes.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you see that it's so ingrained in everything. And so then we go back to language, right? So not just how we speak, but the language that we use and the nature of the words that are used within that language, polymorphic, or, you know, English is such a unique way to communicate. So I think that, you know, looking at the Crow language, for example, there's a lot of stuff that's built into it. And the description of, you know, the house, for example. And the stories that go along with the house. And, you know, the pragmatic lessons that are taught there, and how to respect your house, and how to treat people when they come to your house. And that's all embedded within the language. So, and those are all pragmatic, I mean, those are all practical, everyday things that you did to fulfill your role. So, it just made sense, I think, and I think those are common values we see across cultures, but there's just different ways to instill them in